Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I didn't get to say this to you yesterday, but the Lakers beat the fucking Celtics. How about that?
The Lakers beat the Celtics, baby. I am back. You have conjured me. The Lakers conjured me back up on Locked On Lakers with a win over the Celtics. I am back. I am ready to talk Lakers. They did not make it freaking easy, man. I was so stressed that whole game. I was like, you better not lose to these MFers again.
Then they missed those free throws down the stretch. And you're just like, can we have one thing easy?
And it was like the maddest I've ever been at Anthony Davis. And just like,
I've seen those bunnies.
Yeah, no, they figured it out though, man. They fought back. Boston really had them on the ropes in that middle part of the game, the second and third quarter. The Lakers persevered. Yes, Kemba Walker being out is not really the point. This is more like a Lakers thing, right? That ability to persevere and fight through. I was really proud of how they did that, even though they were enormously frustrating for a good part of that.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the game in segments 2 and 3. I would be awful at my job and probably a pretty terrible human being if we didn't address Kobe Bryant's memorial you know what I walked away from it? It really did feel like a celebration of his life, you know, especially after Shaq and MJ got up and said their piece. It really, you know, it really felt like it, you know, the room kind of turned and people got back to like, and this is how things sometimes go. Now, not everybody handles grief in the same way as I do. But you know, after a month or so, you start the just outright gut-punching, soul-crushing devastation kind of washes over and gives way to an ability to think back on how insane it is and how perfectly Kobe it is that he would teach himself Moonlight Sonata by ear, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
So, you know, we're going to give our thoughts on that, and then we'll segue from there over to the Celtics game, and we'll look ahead to what could be kind of an interesting week for the Lakers. What was your, other than like, God, this sucks. I don't want to be, we shouldn't have to be doing this right now. What was your main takeaway from the way the festivities, the way that the service was held?
Yeah, man. I was not planning to watch it. I thought it was going to be too hard. And I don't like a lot of the imagery. Like I didn't know what it was going to look like. So like, is there going to be like a big picture on an easel of Kobe? Is there going to be like, you know, just all of these things that are kind of associated with the finality of it?
Yeah.
I've really, you know, I'm still in a bit of denial about it, and I've spent a good part of the last month. Yeah. For sure. No, I know. And I've spent a good part of the last month, like watching him play basketball, because that part was finished. It was complete. There was no sense of what could have been. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of gives him an immortality. He will be immortal in this game of basketball. And he was on the road to really doing that in a lot of other places. So I didn't want to watch it to kind of break my little bubble I'd put around myself.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that I did.
Yeah.
Vanessa freaking Bryant, man.
Legend.
I was like, when she got up there, man, and she, you know, chin held high, and it was her opportunity to kind of let the world know about Gigi and what kind of person Gigi was.
Yeah.
'Cause at that age, nobody knows, you know, a 13-year-old, an eighth grader, wasn't even in high school, man. Like her parents, and Kobe obviously wasn't there to testify for her. So Vanessa's just kind of testimony about her life and what she was like. That was really powerful. I could go on and on about this, man. Like, what were your, especially as a new dad, man, like your thoughts and feelings when you were watching Vanessa talk up there?
Well, initially, you know, Jen and I were watching and they were like, yeah, now taking the stage is the person that knew Kobe best, the person he loved the most and all those things. And both Jen and I were like, what the fuck? She's actually going to talk?
Right. Right.
What?
I was mad. I was like, stop showing Vanessa on the TV. Because like Beyonce had done her song, right? And like they're cutting to Vanessa crying. And I'm like, I hate that shit. Because it's like exploiting, like, look at the grieving widow. Yeah, like, come on, man. Porn. But No, she was there to get out in front of everybody. Yeah. Like, so, yeah, man, go ahead. Sorry.
And I think my favorite moment, maybe second favorite, because MJ talking about the crying Jordan meme, it just took me out. But my favorite moment, actually, like the truest, I thought, moment of the afternoon was her standing at the stage, right, and her hands are shaking, and you can hear the shake in her breath, and she kind of like looks up and says something along the lines of like, all right, let's go, or I got this, or something like that, right? And you actually saw her receive the strength to do this astronomically difficult thing. That human element, that willpower, it really showed, like, because no, we don't. Neither you or I had conversations with Kobe, but I think what we were able to walk away with was like an understanding of the things that he valued, right? And
very much so.
And I think in Vanessa, you know, kind of epitomizing, you know, I hate to say it because it's almost cliche at this point, but mama, the mama mentality required to stand up there and give that speech in that moment with that many people watching, knowing what Kobe meant to everybody, like that, that just hammered home exactly what it was that Kobe saw in Vanessa and what made their bond so strong.
Mm-hmm. Bro, that she didn't need to do that, no. Right? Like,
nobody would have held it against us. Nobody would have held it against her. She was like, I can't even speak, guys.
Bro, that was for like, for us and for the world,
yeah,
right? Like, she didn't have to share all of that with everybody, right? They had a private service a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sure there was, you know, more shared there, but like, she didn't have to do all that, and but bro, did she yeah, you could definitely see like why and just like the man, like it's crazy to get to know Kobe in this small way, but in different ways than I knew him before. Like, how much do you really know about Kobe as a husband, right? Like, yeah. You know, kind of like the overall, or as a father. We see pictures, we know he was coaching the girls and all of that, but there's just the levels of detail, like Moonlight Sonata and, yeah, like, you know, romantic gifts that are just all like, they're things to strive for, I think, in terms of how to care for the person that you love. And
yeah, now if there's just so many elements. The dress to the Notebook, I'm like, I'm a loser. Yeah,
he did make us look. He was making us look pretty bad out there. Apparently. Posthumously. Thanks, Kobe. Yeah, man. Vanessa, Jordan, man, Jordan. I did not expect that to hit me. Him to hit me. Kobe's one of the gods, right? And, you know, we talk always about the basketball gods and one of that. He's definitely joined the pantheon at this point, right? Like, if there are basketball gods, he's with them, and he is helping turn tides of games and do all those things we joke about, right? Like, Kobe had a – well, because Kobe was principled. I love Taurasi and Ionescu, just these, like, real hard-ass – basketball players that were just obsessed with the game, that were just like, yeah, like you totally see why they and Kobe vibed with each other. But Jordan was the one.
The big brother stuff is just, that was just brutal.
That's it. That's it, man. Is that like, we idolize Kobe. We revere him. The idea of Kobe being an annoying little brother is fucking hysterical.
It's so funny. Because he's like, he stole my fadeaway. Like, you know what I mean?
Right. Get out of my closet. Like, right. Stop. Yeah. Stop copying me. Stop copying me.
Right.
But then like Kobe ended up teaching Jordan.
Yeah.
Some things, right. Just about like, oh, that's what Jordan kept saying was like, this is just somebody who's trying to get better.
Yeah.
And, Jordan was the only person with the gravitas to speak of Kobe in that way. And it was really neat to hear of him as that little brother type of figure. Cause you never think of Kobe in the like lesser role, right? He's one of the gods.
Yeah.
So, I'm really grateful to him and to Shaq and just Vanessa and just the whole event was really beautiful.
I have one more note on the event that I want to get to on the other side of the break. You know, one thing that, you know, and using MJ as a segue here is just perfect, because he was the nth degree example of this. But the one thing that really struck me throughout this event, and not just, you know, not just the way that Kobe touched fans, but the way that Kobe inspired greatness. Like, you can't walk away from that. Think about the people who spoke at his funeral today, or participated in his funeral today. Beyonce. Like, I don't know if the Queen of England could get Beyonce to sing for her at an event.
Sure.
You know? Alicia Keys, one of the greatest piano players, pianists ever, that has ever existed, plays Moonlight Sonata. You had Diana Taurasi and it's Sabrina Ionescu, right? And you know, Taurasi is all on her way to being one of the greatest ever in that sport. You can make an argument that she's the greatest.
She's already there.
Yeah. And Ionescu is I can't wait to see what she's capable of in the WNBA, because she's already insanely good in college basketball.
If I can jump in real quick, Ionescu had a game at Stanford tonight. There, uh-huh. As we record this, it's at halftime, and she's got Oregon. It's number 3 versus number 4. She's on the number 3 team, and she's like on her way. So she was in LA to do this super emotional thing. She went up and spoke in front of everybody. Right. She's a kid. She's a college kid. And she's back up north, and she's got like 6-8-4 with 3 steals at halftime, and they're up 10. Like, right. Just like, of course she does. Of course she does. Sorry.
Exactly. No. This is all part of the same point. Gino Auriemma is one of the greatest coaches. Not just women's coaches, but one of the greatest basketball minds in the history of the sport. Obviously, MJ is the GOAT. He's the greatest. Shaq is the most dominant big player who you know, in any sport, damn near. You know, Jimmy Kimmel is an absolute legend in his field. The people who weren't performing, right, or who didn't speak, Kanye West was there. Obviously, all the great basketball players of present and past and future. Like, the way that you know, and I said this at the time, and after watching this ceremony today, it really hammers at home, is that, like, what Kobe represented to a lot of people was the pursuit of greatness, the pursuit of perfection, knowing that you are not perfect. And I just, the way that, you know, Jordan said that he went from this annoying little brother to this person who taught me, no, this is what it looks like to pursue that greatness. Shaq talked about it as well in business, as well as basketball. Rob Pelinka talked about it in the 3 ways that he described Kobe, you know. And I think that, like, if you're sitting there trying to find, like, the one, I guess, proudest thing that you're proudest of Kobe, and our ability to watch his maturation from 17 to 41, the thing that I'm always going to carry with me with this guy was the way that he just inspired great people to take that next step and see what am I actually capable of here? How can I actually push myself even further and further my own greatness? And I don't know if we're going to get another person who impacts people in that same way.
What was the thing that they said on the back of the program? And they played it a couple of times. It was, you know, the journey is the dream.
Yeah.
Right. That's something that we all need to hear, because so often we have a hard time staying in the moment and being mindful, because we're thinking like, oh, I'm going to do this in the future, or this is what I've done in the past. Kobe enjoyed the work he had to do that day. Mm-hmm. And he talked about like being able to enjoy that, the boring stuff, the grind of it all, because that is what life is it's 99% of the day to day.
Right.
And so if you can enjoy that, if you can get fulfillment out of that, that's when you're living the dream. Mm-hmm. And I think that plays right into what you're talking about of inspiring people to be great, is that that's something all of us can do. You can do that with your family. And that's the thing that really stood out is, how multidimensional. We always thought of Kobe in terms of that, of it being basketball, mm-hmm. right? But it's not. It's not just that. It's your family. It's your friends. It's your children. It's all of that. And it was really beautiful to see just the multitude of ways that he inspired people in exactly the way that you said in the services today.
Yeah. I mean, the journey being the gift is something that, like, we really have to cherish that gift, right? Because, like, you and I, Pete, in the last, what have we been doing this for, like, 3 years now? Not the show, but, like, covering the Lakers, mm-hmm. right? We've been doing this. Think mm-hmm. back of where we were 3 years ago and how mm-hmm. often you and I would, like, we'd be up late, probably have a few drinks in our system, and we'd be talking about, like, man, like, I can't wait to accomplish this goal, and I can't wait to see what this thing is capable of, and what we're capable of, and where we're going to be going, and what are we going to be able to advance, not just our own careers, but the coverage of the Lakers as well. Can we help this thing evolve? And, mm-hmm. you know, there are moments, like, hell, today, right after the ceremony, we rushed off and literally designed the house that this paid for. You know,
yeah.
that this man. Thing.
And congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
This is my first opportunity to do that. Congratulations.
Thank you. And but this is like, this was one of those moments that you think to yourself, okay, you have to cherish the moment. You have to cherish the success. But way more special has been those nights that you and I talked about. Fuck, man, I just want to make it. We just want to make it. And we got to do whatever it takes to make it. And that journey has been, you know, while it's really cool that I now get I'm going to buy a house. But that journey is what makes that house all the more special, because we know what went into it. We experienced this. And yeah, mm-hmm. if Kobe left one lasting message for us, it's that those moments that you have to cherish, or that you will cherish, that's going to happen. The success isn't that hard to cherish. But if you can cherish the work that it takes to attain those special moments, like, that's when you mm-hmm. are going to unlock a new level of potential for yourself. And what mm-hmm. looking around at that entire arena, at all the people who unlocked their own versions of greatness and attribute some of that to Kobe, is just, you know, that's what today was about, in my opinion. That's what mm-hmm. I walked away from that with. It's not just, holy shit, Vanessa's a freaking icon, but mm-hmm. but also, like, you know, if you're trying to find a large, everlasting kind of message to lead to this to, the finding out what it was specifically about Kobe that unlocked that special level of greatness in all of these truly great human beings. Like, that, finding that out mm-hmm. is just incredible. And being able to do that collectively together, like, that's an incredible gift. That mm-hmm. it's Kobe's last gift that he's going to give to us, and it's a pretty damn good one.
Yep, absolutely, man.
All right, let's segue awkwardly to basketball talk. We are going to talk about the Celtics and how much fun beating them is, even if they're shorthanded. I enjoy beating them shorthanded almost as much as anything, because you get the excuses after. You know, I'm sorry you guys were missing your 5'7" point guard. we'll come back and talk about the Lakers beating the Celtics here in a second. All right, before we get to the Celtics stuff, I got to ask you. I got this question from yesterday's mailbag, and they wanted to know if you've ever had pineapple upside down cake.
I have had pineapple upside down cake, and I like it.
All right, so there's just another thing we're adding to the list of
things. This is that, like, this is the weirdest goddamn thing, by the way. Like, why do you people care?
All right. So
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What do you think of the ham component of pineapple pizza? I think that is part of what's offensive about it, is the pineapple ham. With the ham.
Why mm-hmm. what's wrong with ham? Ham's amazing.
It's just like the ham with the pizza and the pineapple.
So do you think ham belongs on pizza?
No. I'm saying that, like, it's a weird combo with pineapple on pizza.
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of those things that, excuse me, it's one of those things that, yeah, if you're just trying to explain to me this combination of food, I could understand why somebody would say, like, I don't understand why that would be good. But, like, how many things are like that? Like, who would say to themselves, you know what's going to be really good?
No.
This peanut butter.
I'm not talking like it.
And it peanut butter, which has this consistency and has this taste, and then jelly, which has this own spectrum of its own. And you combine those things, and holy crap.
Two things with a ton of sugar taste good together. Who knew?
Well, I mean, ham has like that salty goodness, and then pineapple is sweet. So something sweet and salty and meaty. You add that to an already good concept and pizza.
Where's the pizza come up with that?
Because it's like two good things usually make one better thing.
I'm just saying there's an argument to be made for, like, isn't the saltiness provided by kind of the pizza? Like, is the ham necessary in the flavor profile of it?
Like, are you saying cheese offers saltiness?
No, but like.
Like what?
Like the ingredient? Dough of it, right? Like the way it's prepared, the crust and all that. Like saltiness on pizza.
I don't know. Not the way that you get it from ham.
Nah. We're way off track.
All right. Let's get back to
like advocating this weird pineapple pizza. I've got like 2 hours of sleep last night. Like, I'm surprised you didn't go in for the kill right there, Anthony. Thank you for that. I can maintain my my pineapple on pizza integrity. Yes, Celtics.
Celtics beating the Lakers beating the Celtics is good. The Lakers beating the Celtics is the ham and pineapple pizza of the sports world. I just want a blow by blow account of how you watched that game, because like you said, it was frustrating. It was a brawl. The way that the Lakers went about winning too, where they just realized, you know what, we just got to beat the shit out of them. We just got to muscle them around and stuff. Bill Simmons complaining about calls on Twitter after the game is always fun. Mm-hmm. So just put me in the room while that game is going on with Pete Zayas.
So I really liked how they started the game, especially the end of the first quarter, which is usually an area where we struggle. Rondo and Kuz balled out, and Lord knows they've gotten the most criticism of anybody, and both of them were really, really good in that game, so that was cool to see. Really looking forward to seeing Kuzma kind of have more of those ball-handling attempts with Markieff Morris. We signed him, by the way. That's exciting. But yeah, so that first quarter. And then the second quarter, man, like, we always get killed by wings. I was like, at the beginning of the second, I was like, Tatum or Brown's going to freaking destroy us, because that's what always happens at the beginning of second quarters, because we've got KCP defending him. KCP got a stop in an in-game situation against Tatum. That's very different than like how the rest of the game is, right? Because you got to get a shot up. Props to KCP, who played really well defensively, especially. But those second and third quarters, with just like watching Tatum carve up our wing defense, was just so damn frustrating. And of all people who kind of, you know, slows it down, Kyle Kuzma ends up doing that in the third. Lakers started doubling, and the Celtics did not have a really good short roll concept. So basically what that means is that we were doubling Tatum at the top of the key, and they did not have kind of someone slipping to the free throw line, and they weren't able to really find the open guy. So Vogel made a nice adjustment there. And then the fourth quarter, I was saying very profane things about Anthony Davis, but we pulled it out, baby.
I called him Kwame at one point.
He was killing me, man. And I mean, I wonder if his calves hurt a little bit, or you know, from the other night. But just like, he's so off balance in the post. That's the main thing that bothers me, is how he's so graceful and fluid in some situations, but his footwork when he's stationary and has the ball on the post, he just twists himself into a pretzel. Watch how often he gets the ball stripped from him. He's kind of like falling and tripping over himself. He's not stable. He's super off balance. So yeah, that's it was frustrating, but we figured it out. Really good performance on the defensive end, and LeBron hit that fadeaway, and we got the W.
I do think the Lakers finding out over the course of that game that they can just muscle a team like the Celtics is something that we're going to look back on in case they face Houston in the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. Because like the entire, I think the book that is out on the Lakers right now is basically spread them out as much as possible see if you can take advantage of the minutes that Dwight Howard and JaVale are out there while you have them spread out. And then, you know, hope that they get coerced into just relying way too much on post-ups against mouses in the house, right? And I think the Lakers kind of experiencing that all over again, and then realizing, no, it's not just going to be the post-ups that are going to get us here. It's being physical all over the court. And, you know, the play that wound up being one of the differences in the game was something as small as Anthony Davis just being really physical on a rebound opportunity on a free throw, and got the Lakers an extra possession. Stuff like that. Like, if the Lakers learn that's how they're going to be more effective against smaller teams, that game holds much bigger meaning moving forward.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely the case.
We got to talk about Markieff Morris. How do you feel about that?
I'm feeling good about it. Been watching a lot of tape on him. I had an article out for The Athletic today. He's like, I don't trust his 3-point shooting. He's shooting 39.7% this year, and that's by a few percentage points his best mark ever. But he's a different type of shooter than we have on the roster. He doesn't hesitate. He gets like a lot of different types of threes up. You know, a lot of our, like, Caruso, Rondo, Avery Bradley, even, those guys kind of need conditions to be just right to feel comfortable enough to take the shot from three, although that's been getting better and better, obviously, from Avery Bradley. But still, he's not, like, a sniper. He can't – and what I mean by that is, like, the more moving parts that you add to a jump shot, the harder it is to make it. Yeah. So if you're standing there and you catch the ball right in your shot pocket, that's the easiest three, right? You don't have to square up, move your feet, anything. Just go up with the shot. Perfect. Fewer moving parts. Morris can hit some coming off screens. The ball's a little out of outside of his shot pocket. He's got to readjust his feet before he lets it go. He's got a pretty quick release. So he will help us get some more volume, I think, up. And he's a good, difficult shot maker that is very helpful there. Defensively, I am lower on him than some other friends that I respect their basketball opinion on. So let's hope I'm wrong on this. He's strong. He can be strong. But if he's in the paint, he's not a great athlete, and he's not tall, right? Doesn't have great length. So he doesn't really have attributes that bother guys in the paint. So if he gets mixed up down low, guys are finish around and over the top of him. But when he's focused, which is something like, you know, the difference between playing for the Detroit Pistons and playing for a team that's trying to win a title, I'm going to give a guy the benefit of the doubt that he's going to like focus a little more and try a little harder, you know, and just be more locked in. Like he's a tough guy. He's going to hit you. He's going to beat you up a little bit. Lakers need that totally, Anthony. We really need that. That's kind of part of why I'd like J.R. Smith too on top of this, but we'll see. But yeah, overall, I'm happy with it. I do think they upgraded, maybe not in the place where they needed it most, but I do think they upgraded.
Yeah, I like you kind of joked or you alluded to earlier, Kyle Kuzma, you know, kind of ironically being the guy who shifted the tide defensively against Jason Tatum. And, you know, it turns out it matters that Kyle Kuzma is like 4 or 5 inches taller than KCP. You know,
imagine that.
It turns out that matters. And the Lakers now have another.
Turns out it also matters that Kyle Kuzma is a better defender when the other guy doesn't have a 20-pound advantage on him.
Yeah. Well, but what I mean here is that, like, having another guy in that size range is going to really matter come playoff time. Like,
big time.
I had Matt Moore on the show, and I also had Aaron Larsoul on the show while you were out. And both guys made a version of the point where, you know, okay, it would have been ideal for the Lakers to land Collison, but the need for a secondary creator is going to be somewhat lessened in the playoffs because LeBron's just going to have more minutes on the court. You need that guy a little bit less, right? And I think that's a valid point. I also, like, that all that means, though, is that, like, the upgrade in terms of having more size on the wing, more physicality on the wing, that makes this signing all the more sensical, all the more logical. And I think it's going to be something. I don't think, you know, Markieff Morris is going to be a part of the Lakers' best lineup. If he's closing games, I think something went wrong. But just like the, you know, to tie things back to Kobe, the game, you celebrate a win at the end of the game, but the journey is just as important. And if Morris can help you get through that journey by just being bigger than KCP, than Avery Bradley, than Danny Green, even, against those wings that the Lakers are going to play in the playoffs, that's where this signing will pay dividends, I think.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And he's a two shift guy, but he's like, we just needed one more dude that's like that size. And I think that he would help us because we have such a need there more than he would help most teams. So he's a fine player. Yeah. He's perfectly fine. But I think that he fits really well. And that's one thing that they, for all of what has and hasn't happened this year in terms of the roster, the team always fit well together. And I think that Morris is just another example of that.
Yeah, no, I think chemistry wise, I think he fits in really well with this bunch. Like, I think that's something that the Lakers don't have to worry about. I'm interested to see what it looks like when he's actually there. Kuzma moving more to the wing, I think, is going to be really beneficial to everybody involved. Looking forward to watching that. But hey, we got to get there first. Is Morris going to? Is he available for the next game?
I think we'll find out tomorrow because they play the Pelicans on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm. So, that's a fun game to look forward to as well. Zion against AD. I'm sure nobody will make way too much out of who plays better in that game. we'll get there when we get there. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. This was a fun episode. Like you said, Pete, I think the memorial was something that everybody was kind of dreading. I don't think anybody was looking forward to that. I think a lot of people were approaching it in the same way you did, where I'm not really sure I want to watch this. I'm not. But then you kind of get out on the other side of that and you feel better for having been a part of it. So as has been the case throughout this entire process, this entire grieving process, I'm just happy we're all here to get through it together. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Go fuck yourself, Celtics.